We are back in our studio here in Barcelona, and we have the privilege of being joined by Chloe Caillé. I have to apologize because I introduced you before as a Parisian DJ. For some reason, I always thought that you were from Paris. Where exactly are you from?
That's a very complicated question. I was born and raised in New York City, but I am French, and I did live in Paris for quite a while.
So you're not wrong. Okay.
But I'm actually French. My family is French. We are from the south, just by Montpellier in the mountains, and then from Paris, actually.
Okay. But now you're a resident in Ibiza, so you're almost Spanish.
Now I like to say I am part Spanish by descent.
Yeah.
But it's been my first time living in Spain since I was born and over the last few years.
May I ask, why would you choose to live in Ibiza? Because obviously as a DJ, everyone would think, oh, of course, Ibiza is like the Valhalla for DJs in the summer season. But for instance, winters and stuff, was that something you were looking for, the calm?
I mean, I think I basically, during COVID, it's when it happened. It was not necessarily a decision that was made, like, I'm moving to Ibiza. It was just, I was there, I got stuck there during the second lockdown.
Not a bad place to get stuck.
No, it was great, except you couldn't leave your house, which was not a problem, actually, because I was making a lot of music. So I really enjoy the kind of ability to be on my creative side there. And actually, I love the winters there. I find them actually a little bit more enjoyable than the summer.
Because the summer for a resident, it must be a little bit uncomfortable, no? Like access to places, beaches, just all of a sudden having this invasion of everyone coming to have a wild time and you just want to walk your dog.
It's just very, very chaotic. You know, I think it's very busy. Ibiza is a place that has 159,000 people that live there year round. And then in the summer, we get around 6 million people.
Wow.
So if you count the difference of that, it's a lot. And so when you're a resident, we love it because we have space. We don't have to fight for spaces at the beach, for parking, simple things like traffic, going to your favorite restaurant or going to the grocery store without a big line at checkout. In the summer, that gets tricky. So we tend to have our own places that we go to as locals, but more and more people are finding out about them.
And what about the artistic community in winter? Like, do you hang out with, I don't know, Pascal Macheni?
Yeah. He's one of my closest friends there. We have an amazing community of friends that I think moved there for the same reasons during COVID, actually, that we're kind of looking to get away from cities to tap into a bit more of the nature side and just to take a step back from the hecticness of a city.
Yeah.
And so like Pascal, he lives 9 minutes walking from my house.
Wow.
Who else is there? I mean, Ken Jay, who has an amazing infrastructure there. He's part of our community. There's wonderful people there right now. And I just think I'm finding what I was finding in cities there, but it's even more intimate because you go to people's houses, you cook, you talk. It's like a real kind of, I feel like I'm going back to basics, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, that's great.
So we met at Primavera 2024. We did an interview. Thank you for doing that. That was fun.
People were knocking on the windows.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at a video of it now. I'm looking very sunburnt. You're looking elegant. I'm looking sunburnt. I was thinking that interview had a lot of the more basic things. Anyone's free to go back and listen to that interview. We talked, I remember we touched on, you know, how you got started and studying music industry and various things like that. So I thought, among other things, I'd like to, you know, talk about new things today because that interview's there to listen to. And what you're doing in Barcelona. What were you doing last night?
I did a little talk at Candy Darling Bar with the collective Me Seño Extraña. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I did a little talk with them about just sort of many, many different things, talking about who I was as an artist, where I see the industry, where things are going, my EP that came out last week.
Yeah.
And Giorgia Taglietti interviewed me, and it was a really, really cool interview because I feel like she asked me questions that I don't get asked very often. And we got to dive deep a little bit into subjects that are very interesting in today's environment in the world.
And speaking of the presentation of your new EP, I've heard that the way you're strategizing the promotion for this, it's doing smaller events, right? Than what what fans are used to seeing you in bigger stages. Why have you chosen to do it this way?
I mean, I think for me, the big stage is a great place to play records and to get an interaction with a big dance floor. But I really have been missing the ability to connect with people one-to-one on, let's say, like an intimate setting. Mm-hmm. And it's something, it's the world that I come from. I come from small clubs. I come from not the big stages. So for this specific EP campaign, I wanted to tap back into and kind of give back to fans and give free experiences for people to come in different environments, just have a chat. And I got to meet so many of the people that have supported me over the last few years. And it's been so amazing. There's such cool people. There's such creatives. And it's just been nice to go back to playing like records that I love on not the best sound systems, kind of where it all started, you know? It's like kind of like, again, like back to basics, but back to showcasing a side of me that I don't get to do very often.
No, go.
Because I get the feeling, you know, I was listening to these friends of ours who have a podcast on electronic music. They were like criticizing where like Fortet or Jamie XX are ending up. Because they're playing these massive stages, they feel that they're losing a little bit of their essence of that made them cool in the underground. How do you feel about that? Because that is always a discussion in DJ forums. You know, it's like the underground club with a low ceiling where you can like take risks, like DJ at 100 BPMs maybe and start off slow. And all of a sudden when you're playing like 2 hours in a Deck Mantel, it's like, oh, you got to like bring all these firecrackers.
Well, maybe not Deck Mantel, no?
It's an example of like a respected big festival, no?
Main stage, yeah.
Main stages, no?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I think you're right. I think there's a big thing today where DJs forget sometimes to go back to the roots. And I think that for me, at least when I'm playing a sort of 90-minute festival stage, that's not where I'm going to necessarily take the biggest risks or where I'm going to be able to build a set that's kind of a 3 to 4 hour story where I can start here, take you on a crazy sort of journey and end here and, you know, go all sorts of places. Because you have 90 minutes to come in, come out, and then you're gone and there's another artist playing and it's quite hectic, you know, doing these bigger festivals or even just bigger stages in general. You have to be very timed, especially with artists like Jamie who have a live show. You know, you kind of have everything that's, you know, where you have to go at this time because you have your lighting cue in that moment. You have your production cue. So it doesn't allow you to kind of read the room as much as you do when you're in a small room where suddenly, you know, let's say like I played this club in Mexico City that's called UU. Mm-hmm. I think it's a 60 or 70 person capacity room. The ceilings are so low, you can just touch it with your hand. I think it was like 40 Celsius in there when we walked in. My crew were just like, well, I don't think we can stay in here. I was like, well, I've got 3 hours to play, so I'm staying. And the ability to kind of tap into your audience that's just right there at eye levels with you, and you know they're there for the long run, and you can take chances, take risks, go left, go right, slow down, faster, throw a curveball, like, I feel like that's what challenges you as an artist. And I feel like when you take a bit of that into the big room, then I feel like you're, at least for me as the artist that I am, that's what challenges me and what keeps me kind of going and keeps me excited about what I'm doing.
And you've also managed to do this, of course, by curating your own nights, right?
For sure. I love playing my parties.
Tell us a bit about that. How do you put together like the perfect party? What are the key ingredients?
I mean, it's pretty simple, actually. I would say the most fundamental thing is booking the right artists that know how to play to the crowd that is in front of them and that knows how to bring a vibe into the room. I'd say sound system is also almost as important. The room that you're booking, the room that you're doing the party in, because you can have an amazing party, but if the club that you're doing it in just doesn't have the right vibe, I don't think you'll ever get the right energy.
Yeah.
And also really tapping into local communities wherever we go and making sure that we are there and we are making sure that we are getting ravers there and we're not overpricing tickets. You know, we don't have a VIP in the sense that we don't sell tables. We don't do any of that. We're trying to price tickets out for everyone to come. We offer community tickets for people that can't afford the ticket prices. So I think in a sense, it's curating the right energy in the room, bringing the right music, and then having the right kind of ingredients with the sound, and then I think a good party goes.
See, because one thing I find interesting about that is that means a lot more work for you, because I think it'd be very easy to, you know, pick up your DJ bookings and go and do that. Whereas, you know, if you've actually got to be there and you've got to be like, no, we're not having a VIP room, and maybe you've then got to, I don't know, you've then got to argue that with the owners of the room or the promoter or something like that. Like, do you have to get in that a lot of that personally? I mean, I know you have like people who you work with, but do you still have to kind of really get in there and be like, no VIP room?
Yeah, massively. I mean, we've created the ethos of what it is that is Smile. And I have an amazing team around me where we all believe in the same things and we have the same values and we have the same principles. So we actually don't work with promoters that don't see eye to eye with what we want, because it wouldn't just, we wouldn't achieve what we want as a collective.
Yeah.
And that is the trickiest part, is being able to say no and being able to have options and say, this works, this doesn't work, this could work, but it's a no, you know? And I think as a promoter and even as an artist that's involved, you really can't compromise, because the moments that we have, it's when we've achieved things where we're like, yeah, that was cool, but like, that wasn't us, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of smile, Here to Make You Smile is the title.
Lovely title.
Lovely title. How much of that title is autobiographical? Do you feel that you've been put on earth to make people, other people smile?
I mean, it's such an interesting question, because I never realized how much I love smiling and how much I like bringing positivity into things generally. And I always have, now that my parents are kind of looking into what I'm doing, they're like, this makes sense. But I didn't think about it, even calling the collective Smile, I didn't think about it like that. And then when we were naming the EP, I was like, Here to Make You Smile. Yeah, the tracks do make me smile. They are here to bring kind of sunshine, bring that positive energy. So it's always been like a serendipitous sort of moment where now we're talking about it here and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense, you know? But I guess it's, if you look at my family, we're always kind of the positive ones.
A lot of dance music, I find, a lot of electronic music, there's an obsession with being like louder and darker. You know, if people, there's a lot of scenes in which people are like, oh yeah, that's a really dark tune, you know, and like it's kind of a big compliment. Do you think we underrate happy music?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I grew up listening to all kinds of music. And especially if you go back to, like, the Paradise Garage, you know? Like, yeah. I'm a New Yorker, so for me that's always... Or even The Loft, you know, with Nicky Ciano. And these kind of rooms that were where people went to listen to electronic music. The music they were playing was very uplifting. It was very positive. I think people were going through a lot of difficult times with discrimination and with all of these things. And I think that... New York was a bubble. New York, you know, Detroit, Chicago were places where house music was positive. It was a moment of community to come together, to dance, to sing. There was a lot of vocals. They were groovy. Then obviously you went more into acid house and things got a bit more edgy and darker. But there was still a sense of upliftingness. So I think, like, for me, the element of dance music always has to have both things. Like, I love playing a set where I start on a tone, I take it a bit darker, and then I end on a high note. But for me, I think that happy and positive music has always been a part of the story, especially for dance music artists.
If I gave you a time machine right now, ooh, which club or moment in time that has to do with a musical event or moment would you travel back to?
Definitely the Paradise Garage.
Yeah, like, right? Just, Larry Levan.
Just being in the room when Larry Levan was playing, I don't even know. I can't, like, I can picture it, right? Because I've... watched pretty much every single documentary and I've read and I've seen and I've spoken to people who were there. So I kind of have an idea, but I don't, you know? And like, I just, as a New Yorker, that's one of my dreams.
One of the songs on the new EP is called Ecstasy. And there are spoken word pieces, samples, I guess, on it. Can you tell us a bit about them? I found them very interesting.
Yeah. So I was making the record and I was thinking, like, okay, this is the darker track of the EP. It's a bit more of like the middle of the night. You know, there's a peak moment with the kind of breakdown. And I was like, what would make sense? So I basically went online and looked for old rave videos from the 90s where people were talking about their experience during these sort of free parties that were happening in the woods. And I found this interview that was just collaging sort of different people talking about their experience of raves and of ecstasy, because essentially they went hand in hand. So I just kind of pulled some of those samples out, not samples, just people talking, and then just kind of chopped them all together and created a little story with those.
I wonder, I mean, you are, I'm guessing, too young for raving. I mean, for raving in the sort of, like, you know, 1988 kind of classic sense that I'm thinking of. What's your sort of relation to that period of music? I mean, because obviously in the UK, for example, that kind of period of music is very rhapsodized. People constantly talk about it. It was like a really, really big point, and people kind of look back on it. But as a, you know, as someone who grew up in New York and is a bit younger, I just wonder what you thought about that kind of period.
I mean, I'm hugely inspired by the sort of late 80s, 90s dance music. I think some of the best records ever were written during that time. Most of my sets, pretty much 50 to 60% of what I play are tracks from them, either vinyls that I've ripped to play, either edits that I've made, either edits my friends have made, or either new tracks that sound like 90s records, because everyone's trying to sound like the 90s at the moment.
I know, I was going to tell you, like, the How to Make You Smile, Here to Make You Smile sounds incredibly 90s, including a bit of some of the sounds that you would find on Eurodance hits.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about Eurodance as a genre in itself?
I mean, it's fun. Eurodance is a fun genre. I definitely think that I've overheard Eurodance in the last year. I think everyone's been playing Eurodance, and don't get me wrong, like, I kind of love it because it's fun and it's uplifting. And I think with everything going on in the world right now, having music that makes you actually sing along, dance, and just kind of let go is very nice. And I think that's why the genre kind of blew through the roof, because I think a lot of people were feeling that need for just general positivity on the dance floor. But I definitely think that we've overplayed every single classic 1990s Euro dance record. And I think we're slowly moving away a little bit from that at the moment.
Okay, what's the one record we need to retire? I mean, it might be a great record, but it's just like we've kind of heard it. I'm going to go for Show Me Love. Great record, but please, I don't want to hear it like for a number of years.
Yeah, I also think that sample has been so used at the moment. Like, it's crazy. Everyone's making tracks with that sample.
And great tune, don't get me wrong.
Classic.
But like, you know, like,
whenever David Guetta gets his hands into a genre from the past and starts, you know, making it top 40 eligible again, that's when it's like, okay, time to move away from.
Yeah, 100%.
No shade, no disrespect to David, but you know.
So the opening track on the EP, Be Somebody with S.G. Lewis, kind of has a breakbeaty feel. I know, or if I remember rightly, you went to boarding school. Was it near Bristol you went to?
Yeah, well, I lived in Bristol for a bit. And then I went to music school in Wells. And I'd say the big part of my sort of teenage years of electronic music, I mean, of raving, was actually in Bristol. So I remember going out to raves at Motion, which I've just seen now might be getting shut down, which is really, really sad. But my early days were there, Lakota, and Thecla, which are kind of three institutions in Bristol. And I mean, we would be hearing everything from drum and bass to liquid drum and bass to dubstep was the big one then. I mean, Scream, I remember seeing Scream and Benga back then. It's completely different music. So it was like, I grew up in the UK, and then there was garage. So it was just like, the UK sound has always been a big part of music that I love, music that I play. And I tried in this EP to incorporate elements of breakbeat, because it's also there in Ecstasy. And actually in Everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my favorite track, I'd say. But you agree, no? Ecstasy from...
I don't like to say the favorite when you're actually facing the artist. It seems a bit harsh.
But when I'm listening to like electronic music or dance music, all of a sudden when my ears prick up and I'm like, oop, flag this one for my own hard drive, you know, for my own DJ sets. You know, that was the one that was like, okay. They're all great. But that one was the like... You know, sometimes you gotta...
I mean, it's interesting. It's the last one I made for the EP. I just felt like the EP was almost too positive. And I felt like I needed one track that told the story of who I am in the middle of the night. You know, at the sort of 4 a.m., what do I play? And it's not necessarily all the positive stuff. It's something that's a bit more Journey-esque and has a bit more of a, gritty feeling to it.
As a professional who has to do this many nights, you know, through the year, and you know, it can be exhausting. Now DJs are more conscientious of, you know, sleeping, doing exercise, you know, keeping away from extreme hedonism, to, you know, because you've got bookings. How do you keep your energy levels, you know, right, so that when you have a 4 a.m. slot, you get there and you're pumped, you're excited, and you're ready to deliver?
I mean, it's one of the most complicated and hardest things, I think, that performing artists that work in nightlife, and actually people who work in nightlife generally, right? Not just DJs, but the stage managers, the people that are running the clubs, because the minute you mess with your circadian rhythm is a moment that you tend to like mess up your internal system, right? Because when sleep is everything. So I think when I first started, I was a mess. I definitely did not prioritize my health, and I was definitely all over the place and burning out and having generally a hard time coping with the job. But then I met a couple of really amazing people that kind of inspired me to figure out the balance, because I love what I do and I want to enjoy it, right? But just lacking like a whole night's sleep, like there's so many times where we've had to go straight from the club to the plane, back to the club, back to the plane. Then you land home and you're like, right, now you need to make music. And you're like, your brain is just completely fried because you haven't slept. So I think for me, a couple of things that have really, really helped me, and I'd say over the last 2 years, I've been really focusing on this. The first thing is napping before shows.
Disco naps.
Disco naps.
Used to call them.
Which I used to never do them. I'd like, I'm playing at 4. I want to go to the club. And I'm like, sorry, guys, I'm skipping the dinner and I'm actually going to go to sleep. And
oh, don't skip the dinner.
I'll eat earlier.
You got to nap.
Yeah, but 4 in the morning, it's dinner. You finish by 12, no, 11:30.
But if you land at 6 p.m., you know, and you get to your room by 8 p.m.
Yeah.
And the dinner, the promoter dinner is at 10 and you're done at 12:30.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd rather land, eat straight when I land in my hotel room, sleep, and then actually wake up. And it's a weird time to wake up at 3 and go to the club.
Yeah.
But it's professional. I feel like a professional.
I remember doing that once. I had to give out flyers to some friends. And I didn't want to go out that night. So I set my alarm for 3 and then went down to stand outside clubs giving out flyers, totally sober. And it was so strange. It was kind of nice, but yeah.
It's just, you're just in a different, like, you know, I mean, essentially as a DJ, when you walk in the club, most people who greet you tend to be in a pretty soberish and energy, right?
Yeah.
The difference is when you walk into the party and you have the whole crowd of people that are not. And it always takes me a good like 10, 15, 20 minutes to just like get in the energy with them.
And match the vibe.
And match the vibe, because you're coming from sleep.
Yeah.
So, you know, especially if you're waking up in the middle of your REM sleep, it's like you can be a bit disorientated.
Yeah.
I'd say another thing is exercise. It really helps to regulate your body, really helps to make sure that you're moving, that your circulation's going. It just helps a lot. So I try to do that on the road as much as possible. Eating well, it's the hardest thing, because access to food, for example, there's some countries that just don't have easy access to food, like as in takeaways.
Yeah, or late know? Hour when the or restaurants are closed. Late.
That's, totally. Oof.
I mean, there's always a kebab shop around the club, you know, but
it's not healthy eating.
It's not exactly.
Well, it's delicious.
Just put vegetables in there.
Yeah, it's good. I think, I just think like when we're able to tour and access just good food or prepare meals and things like that, it helps, because you suddenly feel like you're getting your nutrients, you know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like as a DJ, your body is your vessel. So like we're kind of like athletes in a weird way. We're like, we have to take care of ourselves or we can't perform as well as we do.
But give us some insider information, because you know, when you especially when you play festivals, you talk with other DJs. Who have you heard has like an incredible setup? Like, oh, he travels with a private chef, or she's got so and so. You know, those levels where they can afford the private jet and stuff, so that they can control those things of having a good diet and having your personal trainer with you. That kind of thing that comes with being the fat name on the headline.
I mean, I will say on the DJ community, probably none that tour at my level. But I will say on the more, I'd say, live act kind of crossover names, people like Jamie XX actually told me once that when he toured with his band, you know, they were flying around with a nutritionist, a sort of personal trainer, and that it made a massive difference because they were doing these sort of, you know, live shows is every kind of day you do like a 3-month tour, and it's like your whole crew. And I think he had like a 48 person touring party or something. So it's keeping everyone in good energy, you know. Who else? Diplo has a really crazy health routine where he has this whole biohacking basement in his house that just has like all these different places for kind of healing and regenerating after you tour a lot, you know. He's really healthy. But on like the underground DJ circuit, not enough, but it's expensive, you know, it's a complete luxury, which it shouldn't be, actually.
It's something to work toward. You know, when you hear like of someone who works in the same thing as you, industry or whatever, and you hear that, oh, well, I do, I don't know. I have, there's these tablets, these natural tablets that you'd never heard of because it's not mainstream. And then it's like, oh, I'm gonna thank you for the tip. And then all of a sudden it's like, shit, my life is better because I took these.
I'm thinking of Diplo's lab, but that's like Star Wars, you know, when they go and put themselves in like the regenerating fluid.
That
or whatever.
Probably explains his incredible dress sense he's taken up since he decided to dress country western. Diplo, it's the biohacking. Tell us about.
Go on.
Another part of that must be great fun for a DJ, I think, is you get booked to play a lot of the fashion parties, and especially during Paris Fashion Week and stuff. But I imagine it's a weird crowd because obviously, you know, it's a lot of people in these parties. It's all very VIP and stuff. So you're not playing like a main festival stage, and you're not playing an underground club. What kind of sets do you prepare for this kind of crowd that isn't there exactly paying a ticket to watch you DJ? You know, they're celebrating a runway or a presentation of some...
Well, they're not there for you. That's the main answer to that. So, I mean, it's tricky. You know, I've played some fashion parties that had an amazing crowd because the production of the event and the way they've angled the event is actually towards inviting not just fashion people, but actual people that bring a good vibe and that want to dance and party. And generally, fashion companies tend to spend a lot of money on these events. So locations can be insane. You know, you could be playing alongside some incredible other artists, like headliners that you would never cross paths with in a club. So the experience can actually be really interesting. The type of sets really vary depending on the timings you're playing. I mean, most of the time, like, if you're playing something that's a bit more of a cocktail, and let's say, like, you know, you're kind of the background music, it's just blending in and not causing too much stress within the people that are trying to have a chat. But sometimes I've been booked for fashion parties when it's just a proper rave and like they're there to party and you can go wherever you want with it. It's just like playing a really expensive party.
Yeah.
So it's
where there's like free champagne
and there's free drinks and you've got a great rider and you're being given clothes and, you know, you can invite your friends and have genuinely quite a good time. Yeah.
But I like that, you know, you're a very well-known DJ, but you're kind of at the same time from what you just said, you know, if what they need is someone to blend into the background, you'd be like, okay, fine.
Yeah, that's what DJs do, right? Like, yeah. We're not just always a peak time person. You have to always, we're here to play to what's in front of us.
Mm. Yeah.
And whether that's two people or a big fat rave, you got to adapt, you know?
I want to ask about collaborators, if I may, because on the new EP, you work with SG Lewis, Naira, and PPJ. How do you, like, choose collaborators, and does it always have to be in the room, or are you kind of, can you email off a production?
I'm very picky just because I've been put in sessions before that just haven't worked, and it's just the weirdest feeling when you're trying to make something with someone and it's not working. It's almost like going on a bad date and you just want to like walk away.
Imagine I took a plane from Berlin to
Ibiza. You want the drums to be like that, do you?
Well, it's not gonna work. I kind of switched ideas that instead of searching for it, I kind of allow them to happen. Most everyone that I've worked with on this EP are people that I'd met previously, that I'd had at least a long chat with and had just a connection with, that was, I knew that it was going to be something interesting, whether it was liking someone's way of thinking or liking someone's vibe or liking someone's music. Both the Naira and SG Lewis tracks came about after they came and spent a week with me in my studio at home. So that was a really cool way of making music because we weren't time pressured and it was just really nice to have a bit of freedom in the creation. Sometimes, if not sessions, like, right, I've got to go to dinner at 9, I've got drinks here, okay, track will be done, and then the track never gets finished. So we actually left, you know, when they left, we had finished music, and then it just, you know, the tweaks that we could do from afar, but we ended up meeting again in the studio and getting the tracks done. Same with PPJ, we met in Paris, worked on the record there, then we actually swapped stems. I worked on it on my travels, on trains, at home, sent it back to them, they worked on it, and then we met one last time to just finalize it. So collaborations are good, but you need to work with someone that also wants the record to get finished and that's proactive, because if not, records just go to die, basically. Yeah.
And speaking of collaborations, who would you like to do a B2B with, who you think would be an interesting contrast to your style?
Ooh, that's a really good idea.
Ed Rush and Optical, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to play back to back with Fortet. I feel like that would open my brain to going back to my UK roots properly and would help like really push me to dig. I played with Jamie XX this year, which was really cool, and also had me like digging deep into my hard drive and kind of digging deep into like just
because he goes all over the place, doesn't he?
Yeah, of course. And I can as well. So it's like, where are we going to go? What's the limit?
Wow.
I'd say Marcel Detman would be really cool. Just because sometimes I like to play a little bit more just
contundent.
Yeah.
Heavy bass techno.
Autobahn,
yeah. Yes. Which club in the world would be Valhalla for you, like this, the dream club cabin DJ booth?
Dream cabin DJ booth.
You might have played there before. It doesn't have to be one that you haven't played.
I'm
but
thinking.
What do you think is like, this is really, it doesn't get any better than this?
Trying to think, like, tricky question. I played at Panorama Bar last year. Mm. And although it has this big myth around it being the best club in the world, it actually is. Like, that room, when it gets going, and that booth, because you're so around people, like, people are around. It's not like you're isolated on top, or it's not like you're on the ground with everyone else. That's a really, really special room. I'd say Blitz Club, the main room at Blitz Club, is insane. The sound and just the way that the kind of levels on the side elevate and the energy you get from the people. Trying to think, UU's really cool in Mexico. It's just a tiny booth. It's nothing special, but it's just the energy you get in that room is insane. Really, really special.
A question I always like to ask DJs is, possibly you're already married, I don't know, but like, who would you get to DJ at your wedding? Stroke, who did you get to DJ at your wedding if you are already married?
I was just gonna say one more thing. I think one more booth is the Circo Loco Terrace DJ booth, which is one of the most intense booths to play in, but it's one of the most fun because you're with people and they're just touching you everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of fun because you get into an energy with everyone.
Yeah.
Just so I know, I was still thinking about your question. who would I get to play at my wedding? I'm not married yet, but that is a question I ask myself often. I would probably get my best friend Josh Ludlow to play, just because he's extremely versatile and he can play the classics.
Yeah.
And you want the classics at your wedding. You want to dance to Elton John. You want to dance to these sort of big anthems because your family's there, your grandparents are there, and they don't want to hear that underground B-side vinyl rip from 1994, you know? Hmm. And then I'd say Palms Tracks. Jay would be quite fun energy at a wedding to close out, you know, and playing a bit more funky, fun, just that'd be my idea.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Where are you going to next?
I'm going home tomorrow. Actually,
you're going to Ibiza.
I'm going to the sun. I'm going to make music. I'm working on my next EP already. So
already?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's
exciting.
Do we
have a working title?
Not yet, but we've got two tracks.
Ah, nice.
But they've got to be fine-tuned. But yeah.
Do you think it's do you find the idea of a long album interesting for you to make?
For sure. The album I'm working towards right now will be next year. But I'm working on it right now. I'm just trying to figure out the flow of it because I'm actually going to step a little bit away from the Peak Time Club stuff for it specifically. So it's taking me time to step away from the club to make it.
Okay.
Yeah.
World exclusive. Chloe's stepping away from the big the big set to focus on a different vibe.
Let's see.
Let's leave it
Let's
at
see,
that.
It's hard.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Merci beaucoup.
Merci. Thank you.